You'll also get exclusive perks as our way of saying thanks. Because life is always better with a buddy.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. It is now 6 p.m. Stay tuned for the evening edition of Democracy Now!, followed by Interpersonal Update with Dr. Harriet Fraud coming on at its new time slot. And we will continue with the broadcast day. So let's get into it. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!'s evening edition coming up.
From New York, this is Democracy Now! We look at the growing probe into President Biden's mishandling of classified documents after the FBI searched his home for nearly 13 hours. We'll speak with The Intercept's Jeremy Scahill.
These scandals about mishandling classified documents, both Donald Trump and Joe Biden, has really exposed the hypocrisy in elite Washington. Low-level people have the book thrown at them for mishandling classified information. They go to prison. Elite political figures almost never have anything meaningful happen to them, maybe a slap on the wrist. But what this is exposing is the hypocrisy from Donald Trump to Joe Biden and beyond, where you have one set of rules for elite Washington and another set of rules, not only for low-level officials, but for whistleblowers who have the book thrown at them.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In California, seven people were killed and another person critically injured Monday as a gunman opened fire on two sites in the coastal community of Half Moon Bay. Police say the suspect, 67-year-old Chun Li Zhao, turned himself into police after the massacres. Authorities could not confirm whether the semi-automatic weapon he used was obtained legally. A local official says the victims were Chinese and Latinx farm workers at a local mushroom farm where Zhao reportedly worked for decades. Dave Pine is with San Mateo County Board of Supervisors.
But in the end, there are simply too many guns in this country, and there has to be a change. This is not an acceptable way for a modern society to live and conduct its affairs.
There have been three mass shootings in California in the past 3 days. In Oakland, California, at least one person was killed and another seven injured in a shootout at a gas station just after 6 p.m. on Monday night. It came as police in Des Moines, Iowa, charged an 18-year-old with murder after a shooting at a center that provides education for struggling high school students. Two students were killed in Monday's assault in Iowa, and a teacher was injured. Meanwhile, the death toll from Saturday night's massacre at a Lunar New Year celebration in Monterey Park, California, has risen to 11 after another victim died in the hospital. Investigators said Monday they recovered 42 bullet casings from the scene of the attack, the Star Ballroom Dance Studio. A 26-year-old man is being credited with thwarting an even larger tragedy after he wrestled the shooter's gun away from him at a second studio. Brandon Say said he confronted the 72-year-old gunman, Hu Khan Tran, after Tran drove to another dance hall and appeared to be loading his semi-automatic assault pistol.
Something came over me. I realized I needed to get the weapon away from him. I needed to take this weapon, disarm him, or else everybody would have died.
Police reportedly took 5 hours to alert the public that the gunman was on the loose Saturday night. Tran was found dead the next day of a self-inflicted gunshot wound in his van. The Los Angeles County Coroner's Office has so far named 4 of his victims, among them 65-year-old Maimai Nan, whose family said in a statement Monday, quote, "She spent so many years going to the dance studio in Monterey Park on weekends. It's what she loved to do. But unfairly, Saturday was her last dance," unquote. On Monday, residents of Monterey Park held a candlelight vigil to mourn the victims of Saturday's massacre. Local resident An Lau organized the vigil.
"We never thought that it would be one of us. And it's so shocking. We can't accept it. And the reason we came together is basically I was talking to our friends and I thought we have to do something just to get our emotions out, just to comfort each other, just to tell each other that we can go forward."
In the wake of the shootings, cities including New York and Los Angeles have stepped up security precautions for Lunar New Year celebrations, fearing more violence against Asian American and Pacific Islander communities. In Tennessee, the parents of a 29-year-old African-American man who died after he was brutally beaten by Memphis police say their son was defenseless during the ordeal. Tyree Nichols died of kidney failure and cardiac arrest on January 10th, 3 days after his violent arrest following a traffic stop. On Monday, Memphis officials privately showed police body cam footage of Nichols' arrest to family and attorneys. They said after viewing the video, Nichols was pepper sprayed, tased, restrained, kicked, and beaten. This is family attorney Antonio Romanucci.
"He was defenseless the entire time. He was a human pinata for those police officers. It was an unadulterated, unabashed, nonstop beating of this young boy for 3 minutes.
Oh my God.
That is what we saw in that video."
In the wake of Nichols' death, Memphis police officials fired 5 officers for violating department policies, including use of excessive force, failing to render aid. Like Nichols, all 5 of the former officers are black. Tyree Nichols was a skilled skateboarder, an amateur photographer, and father to a young son. 4 more members of the far-right group, the Oath Keepers, were convicted of seditious conspiracy Monday for plotting to keep Donald Trump in power after the 2020 election, resulting in the deadly January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. Last month, the jury also convicted Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes of the same charges. In related news, an Arkansas man who was photographed with his boot on a desk in House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office during the attack on the Capitol was convicted Monday on 8 charges, including obstruction of an official proceeding. Richard Barnett, who was also convicted for carrying a stun gun inside the Capitol, faces up to 47 years in prison. This follows the arrests of 3 active duty Marines who've been charged for taking part in the Capitol insurrection. Mika Coomer, Joshua Abate, and Dodgedale Hellinan were among the mob of Trump supporters attempting to stop the counting of the electoral votes on January 6, 2021. Here in New York, a former senior FBI official was indicted in a federal court in Manhattan Monday after prosecutors accused him of taking hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribes and conspiring to get Russian billionaire Oleg Deripaska removed from a U.S. sanctions list. 54-year-old Charles McGonigal pleaded not guilty to the charges, which include money laundering and violating U.S. sanctions. The United States and Israel have launched one of their largest ever joint military exercises in the latest ratcheting up of tensions over Iran's nuclear program. The exercise, codenamed Juniper Oak, involves thousands of soldiers, a dozen naval vessels, and over 140 warplanes, including nuclear-capable bombers. In the occupied West Bank, Palestinian protesters gathered Monday at the site of a Bedouin village after two high-profile Israeli lawmakers demanded its demolition to make way for illegal Israeli settlements. This is Aija Halim, a spokesperson for the Bedouin villagers.
The existence of settlements here means fragmentation of the West Bank. This village is the key for peace in the Middle East, or the dream of every Palestinian for the establishment of a state. If this village is taken and gone, and they confiscate the area from Jerusalem to the Dead Sea, the West Bank will be split into West Bank North and South.
On Monday, Human Rights Watch warned in a new report that Israeli guidelines on access to the West Bank for foreigners threaten to further isolate Palestinians from loved ones and global civil society. The group added in a statement, quote, by making it harder for people to spend time in the West Bank, Israel's taking yet another step toward turning the West Bank into another Gaza, where 2 million Palestinians have lived virtually sealed off from the outside world for over 15 years, unquote. In Brazil, President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has fired the commander of Brazil's army 2 weeks after the attempted coup and violent attack on government buildings in the capital, Brasilia, by supporters of the far-right former president Jair Bolsonaro. Army General Júlio César de Azuja is the highest ranking of dozens of military officers removed by President Lula over their suspected involvement in the January 8th riots. In other news from Brazil, authorities said Monday they've identified a Colombian illegal fish trader and gang leader as the person suspected of orchestrating the murders of British journalist Dom Phillips and Brazilian indigenous advocate Bruno Pereira last June. Ruben Dario da Silva Vilar is already in the custody of Brazilian police. He's accused of running an illegal fishing network near Brazil's borders with Peru and Colombia, and the region where Pereira and Phillips went missing days before their remains were found. Meanwhile, the Brazilian President Lula has accused Jair Bolsonaro's far-right government of committing genocide against the Yanomami people of the Amazon. Lula's remarks came after he visited Yanomami communities as they face a humanitarian and health crisis triggered by illegal mining that polluted rivers and destroyed forests, depriving people of key food sources. Brazil's justice minister said he plans to order a federal investigation into the crimes. The music and audio streaming giant Spotify says it's laying off 6% of its workforce, about 600 workers. Nearly 50,000 employees at U.S.-based tech companies have been laid off so far this year, following nearly 100,000 tech layoffs last year. In California, workers at a Pete's Coffee store in Davis have approved the coffee chain's first union. Pete's Workers United celebrated the victory, tweeting, "We will not be the last," unquote. Starbucks Workers United, which has unionized hundreds of Starbucks shops across the U.S., said on social media, quote, "Solidarity from coffee shop. Welcome to the labor movement." And in Alabama, a worker who helped lead an unsuccessful union organizing drive at Amazon's warehouse in Bessemer says he was abruptly fired without explanation. Daryl Richardson, who led a campaign to organize his co-workers into the retail, wholesale, and department store union, says he was given no reason for the firing, but he believes it was because of his union activity. This comes just days after the National Labor Relations Board threw out Amazon's objections to a union drive at the company's massive Staten Island warehouse known as JFK 8, declaring the Amazon labor union won last April's election. To date, it's the only successful unionization campaign at an Amazon facility. It came as the percentage of U.S. workers who are members of a union fell to a new low in 2022, just over 10% of the working population. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Political pressure is growing on President Biden after the FBI searched his home for nearly 13 hours Friday, found more classified documents. The documents date back to Biden's vice presidency and his time as a senator. Earlier this month, Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed a special counsel after other classified documents were discovered at a former office used by Biden and at his home. This all comes as former President Donald Trump also faces a special counsel probe into his mishandling of classified documents and for ignoring requests from the National Archive to return missing presidential records. In August, the FBI searched Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate and found 184 documents with classification markings. To talk more about these stories and related issues, we're joined by the award-winning investigative journalist Jeremy Scahill of The Intercept. His latest article, The Secrets Presidents Keep in Their Garages and Luxury Resorts, The Ceaseless Political Scandals Over Classified Documents Point to Deeper Systemic Problems with Washington's Obsession with Secrecy. Jeremy, it's great to have you back on with us. Why don't you just talk about the what's happening with both Biden and Trump and what you really call the scandal of classification overall? Who gets caught and who doesn't?
Right, Amy, I think it's really important just at the beginning to remember that the reason some of the laws and regulations are in place that govern President Biden's conduct regarding classified documents or then Vice President Biden's or President Trump's is because of the scandals in the Nixon administration where there was this attempt and in some cases actual action taken to destroy documents. So it's not just about classified documents. It's also that the president is the ultimate public servant, according to the law, and everything they do as president has to be documented. We, the people, may not have a right to know everything they did immediately, but ultimately they are doing a job that is funded by the public and is part of a democratic process. So it's not just classified documents that we're talking about, it's all of the records. Donald Trump was notorious as president for ripping up all kinds of documents and for completely rejecting many of the norms that are supposed to govern the executive branch in terms of document retention. And what happened was that when he left office, he still was thinking, okay, I might be able to overturn this election. And we all know how that unfolded. And he's also being investigated for his actions around trying to reverse the election results, as well as the events of January 6th at the U.S. Capitol. So Trump is notorious for trying to destroy documents. He had been warned repeatedly about this practice by people close to him who were lawyers, and he seemed not to care much about it. And according to Trump, there was a standing order at the White House when he was president that simply by thinking about declassifying documents, they became declassified. And the specificity of it was that anytime Trump would take documents to his personal residence at the White House, by default, they became unclassified. So fast forward to the waning days of his administration, right up actually to the helicopter taking off the lawn, hours before President Biden was sworn into office, you had boxes of documents that were shipped from Washington to Trump's resort home in Palm Beach, Florida at Mar-a-Lago. And the National Archives, which is an apolitical entity within the government that is in charge of securing all of these documents, making sure that the historical record is preserved, making sure that classification guidelines are followed along with the relevant security agencies, started to say to Trump's people, there are documents missing. And what Trump did from the very beginning was lie, block access, stymie the efforts of the National Archive to retain some of these documents. And ultimately, this went on for about a year. And then in early 2022, Donald Trump's lawyers tell him, you know, you really have to return this stuff. So they give what we understand to be roughly half of the documents we know Trump to have taken. It's possible he took many, many more of them. This probe is still going on. But what's relevant to this is that once it became clear that Donald Trump was holding documents and that some of them were secret, top secret, even above top secret, top secret SCI, where you had compartmentalized information, code word secret documents. Once Trump's people return that initial batch to the National Archive and investigators start looking at what exact documents Trump had taken, what we understand is that they felt that there was a very serious risk that Trump had taken very sensitive documents. So they then try to compel Trump to hand more of these documents documents over. And the allegation is that Trump lied, or his team lied to investigators, lied to the government, refused to fully comply with a subpoena. And ultimately, Attorney General Merrick Garland signs off on an extraordinary search warrant that was executed last summer in August, where FBI agents conducted a raid at Mar-a-Lago and then seized hundreds of boxes, dozens of boxes more, containing 150 plus documents from Trump. And in the affidavit that the FBI filed in support of that search warrant, they said that they believed that they were going to find evidence of crimes, including some provisions under the Espionage Act that have to do with the handling of classified information. This is all extraordinarily relevant to what would then happen with President Biden. Because as the Democrats have done since before Trump was elected president, they have portrayed Trump as a stooge for Vladimir Putin, as in the pay of Russia, as doing the bidding of foreign powers. And this document story fed into that narrative. And there was this feeding frenzy, particularly when we learned that Merrick Garland had had authorized this search warrant to be conducted at Trump's property. And so they really went to town on this. In fact, Joe Biden appears on 60 Minutes just this past September and is asked about this. And he says, how could someone be so irresponsible? And that his first reaction when he saw the FBI photos of documents laid out on the floor at Mar-a-Lago was, what sources and methods have been compromised? Well, fast forward to November 2nd. Joe Biden's lawyers are shutting down an office that had been set up just blocks from the U.S. Capitol for Biden in the period between his vice presidency and his presidency at the University of Penn. It was called the Penn Biden Center. And the managing director of the Penn Biden Center was Tony Blinken, who, of course, now is a very, very senior official in the Biden administration. And they, one of the lawyers just comes across in a locked closet. And mind you, all of this is based on what the Biden people have said. So we have to take it with a grain of salt, because people in power mislead and they lie and all of these things. But taking them at their word, the narrative is that they discovered a manila envelope that was marked personal. And inside of this envelope was a document containing classification markings. So they continue to search and they find other documents that appear to be classified. The Biden people then at the White House are informed about this, and Biden doesn't widely share this information with people in his administration. Instead, they gather together an informal war council, and among the people in this war council to try to determine how to handle this. Mind you, they know immediately how incendiary this is. They have gone to town on Donald Trump over his mishandling of classified information, and the midterm elections are just days away. So the Biden people gather an informal war council with Bob Bauer, who is a very famous Democratic elite power lawyer, and Bauer's wife, Anita Dunn. Anita Dunn, who is a senior advisor to Biden, was an official in the Obama White House, also was called by Harvey Weinstein when the New York Times was about to break the story of his heinous crimes against women. And she was like a PR guru brought in by Harvey Weinstein. She's then in the room trying to figure out how the Biden people are going to respond to this. And so what they ultimately decide is, let's self-report this to the Justice Department and to the archives, and let's just try to do the opposite of what Trump has done. Let's just be completely transparent with them in the hopes that this will all go away. And what we now know is that the Biden plan was not to say a word about this to the public until there could be a clearing of them by the Justice Department. Well, then the nightmare starts to happen when more documents are discovered in late December, not in a locked closet in a think tank blocks from the Capitol, but literally on the floor of Joe Biden's garage next to his prized Corvette. They did not, for 68 days, the American public was not told that the President of the United States had discovered documents that were not supposed to be in his possession once he left office, and that, in fact, that had been a prime attack vector that they had opened up against Donald Trump. Biden only acknowledged the first batch of documents, not the garage documents, when CBS News broke the news that there had been an initial probe launched by Merrick Garland involving the U.S. attorney out of Chicago. So you have, on the one hand, the scandal of the documents themselves, which really deserves heavy, heavy scrutiny on both Biden and Trump. But then you also have the fact that the Biden people Clearly, we're not planning on informing the American public about this, and they definitely delayed it until after the midterm elections and probably would have delayed it to this very day, thinking that they could just get cleared internally by the Justice Department.
And Jeremy, could you talk about the double standard that operates in Washington in terms of classified material? Remind us of some of the high-powered people who were caught inappropriately or illegally using material, but then got slaps on the wrist compared to whistleblowers and others?
Yeah, great question, Juan. I mean, one of the most famous episodes was Bill Clinton's former national security advisor, Sandy Berger. In 2003, Berger made a number of trips to the National Archives and physically removed multiple copies of a document that had to do with the Clinton administration's preparations for terrorism attacks. And Berger had been called to testify in 2003 before the 9/11 Commission. And so his rationale for going into the National Archives was that he was preparing for testimony, but he actually stuffed documents, classified documents, inside of his clothing and then brought them out of the National Archives. He destroyed some of those documents. He left others of them near a construction site that he said he was going to go and pick them up later. And ultimately, Sandy Berger gets caught. I mean, mind you, this is destroying classified documents. And you know, there's serious questions about what Sandy Berger was actually doing there. That's probably for a different time. But what ended up happening is that Berger was just sentenced to probation. He lost his security clearance for a few years. And I believe as a result of it, he was also disbarred. So no actual criminal penalties to speak of. Former CIA Director David Petraeus improperly shared classified documents with his biographer, with whom he was also having an affair. Now, that brought him down, as CIA director, but ultimately he just got probation and a $100,000 fine. There are also cases, Juan, of government employees, very junior people, who mishandled classified documents for pretty mundane purposes. I tell the story of one woman who was unable to access documents she was using for a classified dissertation that she was writing, and she had taken three other classified dissertations because COVID restrictions wouldn't allow her to go into a SCIF anymore, a secure classified intelligence facility. She was given 3 months in prison and basically had her entire career destroyed. You know, Joe Biden has been in Washington longer than anyone at this point. He is the epitome of the kind of career politician who's made their entire life off of Washington. And Biden himself tanked the nomination of Ted Sorensen to be Jimmy Carter's CIA director because Sorensen, this is in the 70s, Biden as an early senator, because Sorensen had written in an affidavit in support of Daniel Ellsberg, the Pentagon Papers whistleblower. The affidavit wasn't even filed, but Sorensen, who was a friend of the Kennedy family, was going to be a total reformer at the CIA. Biden colludes with the Republicans. They dig up this unfiled affidavit in which Ted Sorensen admits that he had taken home classified documents to write his biography of his good friend John F. Kennedy. And at the time, Biden suggested that Sorensen might be prosecuted under the Espionage Act for such conduct. The point Sorensen was making is that everyone in Washington takes home classified documents. So, you know, with Biden, we now have this, you know, doc, goose, here a doc, there a doc, everywhere a doc. With Trump, we have this defiant, yes, I did it. I had a right to do it. And anything that I do to stop you from violating points one and two, I'm right in doing. This is a disaster, though, for Joe Biden, because the Republicans control the House. They are going to go after him. They're going to bring in Hunter Biden. Did the Chinese have access to the garage? They'll ignore Trump completely. You know, totally reckless behavior on Trump's part. But they are going to go to town on Joe Biden over this. And there are skeletons in Joe Biden's closet. We all know that. And so this is going to be a really incendiary period for this White House.
Jeremy, we want to ask you to stay with us. We'll do part two after the show at democracynow.org. Jeremy Scahill, senior reporter and correspondent at The Intercept. His latest piece will link to the secrets presidents keep in their garages and luxury resorts. And the war caucus always wins. That does it for our show. A very happy birthday to Tarina Nadura. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Woronoff, Sam Alkoff, Tarina Nadura, Tay Maria Studio. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
As New Yorkers, we like things fast. And when it comes to COVID-19, it's all about acting fast. Acting fast to get tested and treatment if you have COVID-19 symptoms. Treatment works best the sooner you start and can help you avoid serious illness. So act fast, especially if you're over 65 or have pre-existing conditions. Call your healthcare provider or 212-COVID-19 for testing and treatment options. And remember, COVID-19 vaccines are still the best protection against serious illness from the virus. Visit nyc.gov/vaccine finder today.
That message brought to you by the New York City Department of Health. This is WBAI New York.
La iniciativa Visión Cero le recuerda que el exceso de velocidad arruina vidas. Conductores, estén pendientes de los peatones y ciclistas. Y al doblar, reduzcan la velocidad a 5 millas por hora.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Interpersonal Update with Dr. Harriet Fraud. That's coming.